Spirit Radio Podcasts.
Yeah, for many of us, the thoughts of our partner, our wife, husband, family member, a friend suffering from a long-term illness is difficult and upsetting to consider. Watching a loved one struggle with a devastating disease such as Alzheimer's. Now, our next guest has written a memoir and a very personal account of a book, an honest account of her relationship with her partner in living and dealing with his diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease. And in the studio now to tell us more, we have... and with her new book as well, we have Julia Kelly with her new book, The Matchstick Man, or Matchstick Man, I should say, Julia. Julia, it's a real pleasure to have you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming in. Well, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself, first of all, for those of us who don't know you?
Yes. So this is my third book. It's my first book of first work of nonfiction. I grew up in Dublin. I worked as a very poor editor in London and publishing for many years.
We were just talking about that. You, the desk editor.
Terrible, woeful desk editor. But I came to writing relatively late.
And I know that the journey of writing was very wrapped up in your relationship with your partner, who's the subject of this book.
He's really the reason I became a writer. He really helped me get started. I met Charlie 14 years ago in the Tyrone Guthrie Centre, which people usually call Anna McCarrick in County Monaghan. And I got in there by the skin of my teeth. I'd done virtually no writing at all. I'd written a column and a little bit of quite poor travel writing for Rough Guides. And I met Charlie. Charlie was a very well-established artist, and
beautiful work. You know,
really powerful
artist.
Work.
He's from County Down, from Bangor, isn't he?
Yes, he is. Yeah, he grew up in Bangor before the Troubles, and then a lot of his paintings are about the kind of the ideal childhood he had before all the Troubles began, and then a little bit of the aftermath. There's darkness and light there. I didn't meet Charlie for the first week, but everybody talked about Charlie and Skippy, and I imagine this maybe a kind of a young Californian man with a tomboyish child is you know, I didn't know what to think, but I just thought their names were so lovely. I couldn't, you know, I was excited to meet him. And when I did, he was nothing at all like I expected. He was kind of entirely bald, gaunt, northern, and Skippy wasn't a tomboyish child, but a 6 foot long iguana that he held under his arm the first time I met him.
Wow.
But Charlie very quickly became a mentor to me, and he taught me to write using all my senses, not just the visual. You know, talk about the you know, what something sounds like, the touch, the smell, turn things upside down, be original, be brave, be honest. And he used to correct my work quite kind of rigorously and kind of brutally at times. He'd put a line through the whole thing and write his own version on the back. Initially, I thought this is how I become a writer. And it was only, you know, probably halfway through my second book that I realized that you kind of have to take flight on your own. You have to trust your own instinct. But for the first few years, I showed all my work to Charlie, and he was an incredibly good editor, and really is the reason I became a writer. And he helped me very much in my first book, which is called With My Lazy Eye, which is largely autobiographical, as most first books tend to be. But he literally sat through it chapter by chapter, and that's honestly how I got my book deal and how I developed.
Yeah, and so, but it's been a few years since that second book, hasn't it? Before the third book, this one came out, The Matchstick Man.
Yeah, it's been a good few years. So we've had a tricky enough time.
And that's because, well, I suppose, because of what's been going on.
Yeah, so Charlie's Alzheimer's has obviously been the biggest kind of trauma to deal with, but also my mother died very suddenly swimming in the Galapagos on holidays. Wow. And she was, you know, fit and active, and she was 72, but, you know, a healthy 72. Her name was Delphine, which means dolphin, and her favorite thing was swimming in the sea. So it was a really beautiful way for her to go, but very shocking for all of us at home, and very difficult to bring her home, and then to see her, you know, after she died. Very, very difficult. And then we lost a baby at 17 weeks, and you know, we had to go through the trauma of the you know, service and the burial, and, you know, giving birth to her. And then what happened after that was Charlie During the Troubles, he was in his mid-20s and he was walking home on the 11th of July, which is quite a tense night in the north ahead of the 12th of July parades. And he came across a young boy in a place called Pigeon Wood, in a dark wood, on his way home. And the boy had been, he was 16 years old, he'd been shot in the head. And Charlie sat with this boy. He knew the boy. He was the younger brother of a friend of his. And he sat with this boy while he died. And then the police came the next day. Charlie had been chain smoking because obviously he was extremely traumatized by the situation. And when he brought the police back the next day to show the spot where the incident had happened, there was a lot of spent matches, because, you know, from his smoking. And so he used this as a symbol to remember this boy, Michael Brown, in all his paintings. And I subsequently used it for the book, because I thought it was a very accurate metaphor for Alzheimer's as well. But when we lost this baby, sorry, I've gone off on a bit of a tangent, but when we lost this baby, Charlie got, he had never received any counselling for the death of this boy. And he got the two things confused in his mind. So he was grieving still for this boy, Michael, and for the baby we lost. And then his Alzheimer's kicked in very suddenly and significantly. It began with a profound depression, and then he was diagnosed shortly after that.
Yeah. I mean, the book is an extremely personal account of your journey, his journey. Tell us a bit about the book and the background.
So I was initially working on my third book, which was going to be about a fictional book about a wedding in Italy. But it was while Charlie was developing Alzheimer's, and he one day, he had moved to a house in Killiney. He'd been diagnosed at this point, and social workers had said, listen, it's not safe for you all to live together. We have a 9-year-old child, and there was an awful lot of stressful incidents happening at home, and it was very confusing and a little bit dangerous for her.
Yeah, now you talk about that, you know, mistakes that people make when they have this disease. They'll do things like try to give someone a bath in scalding water and that sort of.
Yeah, and he tried at one stage to put our little girl in a car seat upside down. You know, the car seat was upside down, and he was trying to put her into it. And she's a very, very logical child, so she was screaming, knowing this was wrong. Mm. But Charlie was going through his own. You know, none of this was his fault. He was terrified, you know, frustrated, confused, scared. But we were told by social workers that it was an urgent child protection issue, that we needed to live separately. And that was an extremely difficult decision for me, because Charlie was very dependent on me. I wanted to still look after him, but I needed to, you know, I was, you know, frantically worried about our little girl. So he moved to a basement flat, and, you know, with friends of ours, 3-story house with friends of ours in Killiney. And it was one day I was over looking out. I was caring for him twice a day, along with his daughter, Domino, I was coming in the mornings and the evenings, and she was coming in the afternoons. And it was one day Charlie said to me, what are you working on at the moment? And I said, all I can write about is this situation, because it's so overwhelming. And he said, well, will you write about it? Will you write about me? And will you explain to people that none of this is my fault? You know, that the way I've behaved, you know, because he had been quite tricky at times to friends and family. And please explain this, explain to people what dementia is like, you know, write about my childhood stories. He has these beautiful childhood stories of, you know, growing up in Bangor by the sea. And he wanted our little girl, you know, to read about them when she's older. And also for me, it was a chance for me to, you know, I felt hugely guilty. I still do. It's you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't with Alzheimer's. It's a very, very cruel illness for everyone involved. But I felt that I'd let Charlie down, I heard that I had, from various sources, that people thought I'd abandoned him, and that, you know, at that point I was on my knees with tiredness, you know, trying to care for him and our child and trying to still bring in some sort of income. So it was also a way of explaining what our day-to-day life was like for those years, and is still like in many ways.
Yeah. And this experience, though, I mean, I it's wonderful with the way you write about it. It's almost like you're really trying to love someone who can't do anything, you know, who can't love you back, and is sort of disappearing and, you know, almost becoming someone else. I mean, it's almost a remarkable experience to have to go through for someone.
In many ways, I'm closer to Charlie than I ever have been. He's extremely benign now. He's extremely warm and loving himself. He's still very lucid. But what's tricky now is that when he is most Charlie, he is quite depressed and can be very angry and at times suicidal. And then when he has more Alzheimer's, he's much easier to get along with. But we still are exceptionally close. I see him 6 times a week. My daughter sees him probably once a week. That's a little trickier. She loves him and she holds his hand and she helps him put his shoes on. And
she's still young.
She's 9, but yeah. She's. I was talking to a counsellor about this, and apparently, where there's an illness or where there's an absent parent, a child often misses a few milestones and becomes more adult. So we've been like a little team, really. So she's quite a grown-up 9-year-old. She's more like a 12 or 13-year-old. She's very responsible. Mm-hmm. So when she's with him, you know, she talks in quite an adult way. She makes sure the environment isn't noisy. She's extremely kind and tolerant of his questions. He might ask her 4 or 5 times what age she is, and you know, in one visit, or if she's learned how to ride a bike yet, which unfortunately she hasn't. We missed that milestone as well.
That's not the main milestone you're talking about.
No, but that's a big one for Charlie, so we're going to try and do it this summer. Mm. But she is extremely tolerant with him, and she's so loving with him. But at the same time, he's fading and has been fading from the stage for many years. So she's a little, they adore each other, but it's a little bit of a strained relationship, and she can be at times a little nervous of him, and she doesn't like to be in the room if I've left the room. You know, it's a locked Alzheimer's ward. It can be frightening at times for someone that small, or even at times for an adult, it can be disconcerting.
I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure of it. I mean, is it a book that he has read? Or I know you talked to, read some of it, hasn't he?
Yeah, so I've read out, in fact, all of it now to him, but because of his condition, he will enjoy it and react to it at the time, but then the following day he will say, I haven't seen this book, can I see it? So he won't remember. His short-term memory is completely gone. Now, I know that there's been, largely, people have been incredibly lovely about the book, and even though it's about something quite depressing, people have said it's quite a gripping read. They read it in one sitting, and it's uplifting. But I have had a couple of people say, "Oh, it's very exposing of Charlie, and it's not fair to him because you're writing about very, very personal things like incontinence or, you know, extreme aggression." But I don't feel it would serve anyone to write about Alzheimer's and not write about it entirely honestly. There's no point in writing about the cute funny bits, of which there aren't very many, but there's just no point. And Charlie would believe that more than anyone, that you know, Charlie taught me to be a very honest writer. I can't write any other way. So that's the only criticism that has been leveled at me, but in my defense, I'd say that you have to write honestly because it serves nobody otherwise.
Well, I must say, and I said this to you, I was saying this to you off air, Julie, I think you write beautifully.
Thank you very much.
And I must say, is there a hope that you have for this book, for those who read it? Are you hoping to reach those who are, you know, fellow travellers like you in this struggle?
Absolutely, and a few people have said to me already that they now understand what Alzheimer's is. Mm. So if I achieve that, well, that would be the most important thing I could do with the book.
Yeah, well, it's a wonderful production. It's a lovely hardback production. I've got it here. It's case bound, and it's available now, isn't it? It's available.
Oh yes, yeah, it's in all. There's a paperback, slightly cheaper version, and a hardback, I think, just in Hodges Figures. But the paperback is available nationwide.
Well, let's encourage those who are listening to this to go for hardback.
It's really beautifully produced.
Yeah, the hardback book with a lovely ribbon is beautifully produced. And Julia, what does the future hold now for you and your beautiful daughter and Charlie?
Well, we have a lot of happy days still, despite everything. I selfishly don't want Charlie to die any day soon. And I know, because I know that's a freight train coming down the track for my little girl. But I want to put that off. You know, I want him to stay alive for as long as possible. Although I do appreciate that selfish, because his life can be pretty hellish some days, you know. Mm. So, but we're carrying on, and life has, we have lots of laughter still. And I'm going to be starting my next novel. I've written a synopsis, and it's going to be set in Kathmandu, and it's about somebody elderly dying abroad.
Oh, wow. Well, so, we're looking forward to that already. But Julia, I wish you every success with this beautiful book.
Thank you so much.
And I must say, it's wonderful to hear your story and how much you've served and loved Charlie. And that's been something which I've found really very moving. And
thank you very much.
I wish that I hope that you get a chance to read it if you're hearing us here today. I'm here with Julia Kelly. Her beautiful book, Matchstick Man, is available now. Try and get the hardback version. I think it's always good to try and get yourself a proper hardback of a beautiful book like this. And you can get it from all good bookshops. And of course, you can go online if you want. But bookshops are better. That's what we like to say.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.